Ooh, it only took 40 years to make a decent Halloween sequel. It's better than everything else, but not in the same league as the original. I'm Jason Konigsberg of PanAndSlam.com, and today I'm reviewing the new Halloween movie directed by David Gordon Green, one of the most anticipated movies of 2018, and certainly the most anticipated horror movie of the season has arrived. Michael Myers comes back to Haddonfield in the newest Halloween, a direct sequel to John Carpenter's 1978 classic slasher film of the same name. This movie is a direct sequel to the original, picking up 40 years later after the events of the first film. It also completely ignores the events of all the Halloween sequels and starts a new timeline for the franchise, the third or fourth of the series, depending on where you place the Rob Zombie Halloween films. Even the opening shot of a clock ticking at a slanted angle conveys that this is a new time period. This turns out to be a shrewd maneuver for the film because in order for this Halloween to work, you needed a bunch of bad sequels over time for David Gordon Green to accomplish what he did. It needed to learn from all the mistakes of the previous films to create what is on screen. This is the second best Halloween of the 40-year-old franchise, but it still does not come close to the timelessness of John Carpenter's original masterpiece. The opening title sequence is a nice homage to the original and a sign of things to come. It uses the same orange font over black, and instead of zooming in on the pumpkin burning out, it shows the pumpkin in reverse from rotting to being a brightly lit jack-o'-lantern. This Halloween is filled with loving references to the original. One can tell that writers David Gordon Green and Danny McBride are huge fans of the series, and if the fanboys had the same access to getting a film produced, they likely would have made the same sort of picture. One element the filmmakers added that was unique, and a reference to Halloween 2, are the early scenes in a mental institution where interviewers for a podcast go to try and talk to Michael Myers 40 years after his infamous killing spree and show him the iconic mask he used. They use white as a representation of evil in the early part of the film, and then around the time Myers escapes a bus accident and puts on the clothes of a mechanic he murders, the color scheme starts to change to the more conventional black representing evil on Halloween night when he comes home to Haddonfield. Michael Myers is not the only one with a notable introduction. Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode gets quite distinguished treatment when the documentary crew visits her secluded abode. Isolated in the middle of the woods, filled with security cameras and numerous locks on her doors, she's a hermit obsessed with keeping herself safe from Michael Myers if and when he gets free. At first, it might seem that this Laurie Strode has such a one-track mind for 40 years, it's hard to imagine her ever having the time to date, get married, and have children, but the scene quickly explains how her obsession ruined her marriages and made her estranged from her daughter and granddaughter. She is aware that she is a basket case, as she calls herself, but is willing to accept a life of seclusion as a hermit. She has a rocky backstory since we last saw her as a babysitter and is now traumatized from the night Michael Myers came home. This Halloween develops Jamie Lee Curtis's character very well with her past, and it also probably helps that she's the best actress in the movie, and it feels as if everything leading up to the climax is building for a showdown between her and Michael Myers, who has haunted her entire adult life. The same cannot be said for the rest of the characters. This is the shortcoming of having David Gordon Green and Danny McBride as writers. They have pitiful attempts at humor as the dialogue takes place between Allison, Laurie Strode's granddaughter, and her friends. They all come across as annoying and make the audience almost want to root for Michael Myers to make them statistics in his body count once the inevitable happens. They also fail to develop her daughter Karen, played by a terrific actress, Judy Greer, as more than just a confused parent trying to shield her daughter from her crazy grandmother. She gets some meaty scenes, but they are overshadowed, probably intentionally, by Jamie Lee Curtis, but that makes Greer's performance seem like a non-factor when she's really a good actress. The two British podcasters are not advanced enough in the story to come across as good, bad, or three-dimensional. They meet their demise rather quickly so that Michael Myers can get his mask back from them. They are two of the first kills and take place during daylight when white is still the predominant evil color. It could have worked more effectively without the humor that this film felt necessary to insert during the kills. Adding lightheartedness at inopportune times takes away from the fear and terror the audience should be experiencing and the gravity of the situation that people are actually being brutally murdered. But that is what happens when you have the guys who wrote Eastbound and Down make a Halloween film. Also, the sound mixing was not as well-crafted as it should have been, and sound is vital to a horror movie's success. Maybe it was the particular screening, but a lot of the lines of dialogue and even the sound effects themselves seemed dull and quiet, not as loud and pronounced as they should have been, thus making one wish they could turn up the volume in the theater, or that they hired a better sound operator. The score by John Carpenter with his son Cody Carpenter and Daniel Davies is a nice updated reworking of the original score Carpenter composed back in 1978. It is amazing how his cheap synthesizer score made on the fly is as iconic today as the works of Bernard Herrmann for Psycho and the Academy Award-winning John Williams composition for Jaws in the pantheon of great horror movie music. The mask in this Halloween is an effective look. It makes Myers look older and more weathered, since he is. The best part of the performance is Nick Castle returning as The Shape, which he played in the original and does a lot of the same moves like the head tilt as he did in that film, obviously on purpose, but they are powerful moments and gestures showing that nobody can embody Michael Myers quite the same as the original. It's a haunting, wordless performance that is difficult to pull off. The filmmakers and Nick Castle's expertise are illustrated in the film's greatest moment, a long tracking shot that follows Michael Myers when he first arrives back in Haddonfield. It was shown in the movie's second trailer, and it is even better in the context of this film. One other note, the advertising for this movie is really well done. They don't show much past the first hour in all the previews, so there's really very little to no spoilers and still a lot of moments that will genuinely surprise you when you're sitting there in the theater. One of the biggest sins of the new Halloween is that it falls into the trap of being fun, but is never truly scary. There are a few jump scares, but that overall terrifying fear of dread that the original had in spades as you waited is not here. This Halloween is too busy trying to be funny, weakness again of the writers and director, or make clever nods to the original and its sequels, which is neat, but each homage takes you out of the movie and reminds you of the first one. There's a great shot of Allison sitting in class framed and lit the exact same way as Laurie was in the first film, looking out a window while her teacher's talking off screen. The voice of the teacher is another clever cameo. And she looks out the window instead of seeing Michael Myers, she sees her grandmother standing in the exact same way. This Halloween does attempt social commentary more constructively than its character development. In this version, Michael Myers serves as a metaphor for the horrors of the real world we live in. One of the teenage characters, in between his moments of spouting out unfunny nonsense, does make reference to the fact that Michael Myers only killed 5 people, and that is not really that bad in the big picture. Sadly, it is a profound statement that in this world, with mass school shootings, terrorism, and a corrupt legal system, one guy killing 5 people does not exactly make for a massacre or tragedy in the news in 2018. But do not fret, horror fans. Michael Myers certainly racks up a much higher kill count in this Halloween, and they do not go light on the gore and violence either. The original Halloween is tame by today's horror standards, and the filmmakers knew that they had to deliver a lot more dead bodies, and they certainly succeed on that front. Surprisingly, this film is also a metaphor about the struggles between 3 generations of women. A mother that tried to teach her daughter that the world is an evil and terrible place and she needs to protect herself and stay safe at all times, against a woman who's trying to raise her child that there is a lot of love and happiness in the world. Then the granddaughter is torn between their 2 philosophies and has to decide what the world is for herself. There was an impressive set design in one of those early scenes where this meeting between the 3 women takes place at a restaurant. The audience learns Laurie Strode has a drinking problem, and they argue in front of a bar that's decorated with all orange and black. This scene is one of the best scenes in the film that works on its own without Michael Myers' references to the first one or any elements of horror. It's just good acting. The rest of Halloween is more references to the original, like the way Michael Myers escapes from Smith's Grove's mental hospital in a car, and we see a bunch of mental patients walking around aimlessly on the road after a bus accident. There's a scene in a car where he surprises a driver, echoing the way he dispatches one of Laurie's friends in the first film. This Halloween is very self-aware, which works for it at times and against it at times. When Laurie Strode meets his doctor, right away she says, "You're the new Loomis," referencing Donald Pleasance as Dr. Loomis in the 1978 film, taking away from the new actor's performance for the sake of a nod that will make the audience smile and feel smart. All these references are good, but this makes Halloween less scary than it could have been since they take us out of the movie and remind viewers that this is a sequel to the original. This may seem like a conflicted review because there is a lot to admire about this updated version of Halloween, yet there are still enough evident flaws that take the viewer out of the action on screen. This film has its fair share of inept moments that defy logic, but they are small, and this Halloween does succeed in what it set out to do and create can confidently call itself the best sequel to John Carpenter's Halloween, and that is worthy of a recommendation. I'm Jason Konigsberg of PanAndSlam.com. Live long, prosper, and watch movies.